Airlines Confidential with Ben Baldanza and Scott McCartney is made possible with support from Pratt & Whitney, committed to working smarter, cleaner, and greener today for a more sustainable tomorrow. Learn more at PrattWhitney.com. DoHop, revolutionizing travel connectivity. Learn how to unlock unlimited connections simply at DoHop.com. And Cirium, the world's most trusted source of aviation analytics. Visit Cirium.com. We also welcome your business's support. Info at airlinesconfidential.com.
Welcome to Airlines Confidential. I'm Scott McCartney, and I'm excited for the upcoming Duke Carolina basketball showdown this weekend. I'm excited for our upcoming discussion with Zane Kirby about travel advisors, travel agencies, and changes underway at American Airlines. And I'm excited to share a story I think many of our listeners will be envious of, or at least inspired by. Let's just say it's a major undertaking at an airport, and it has grave consequences. But Ben Baldanza, I don't want us to get buried under a lot of news this week. Hint, hint, wink, wink.
I'm intrigued, Scott McCartney. I look forward to our discussion with Zane. But as a loyal grad of Syracuse and Princeton, I'm hoping both Duke and Carolina somehow lose on Saturday.
Ouch.
And I would point out that Princeton has a better record than both, even though their competition is less daunting.
Well, yes, I think that's the reason why. It's safe to say, Ben, that one team will win at Cameron Indoor Stadium this weekend, right? And that team will be wearing some shade of blue. And it's safe to say that last year was the safest year in aviation history. The International Air Transport Association reported that there were no hull losses and no fatal accidents involving passenger jets in 37.7 million flights. There was one fatal turboprop accident in Nepal, resulting in 72 deaths, including jets and turboprops. It was the lowest accident rate in the past 10 years. For comparison, there were five fatal accidents in 2022. This year is off to a rockier start, as we know. The collision on a runway in Tokyo led to five deaths on a Japanese Coast Guard plane and the fiery destruction of an Airbus A350. There were no fatalities from a door plug flying off a Boeing 737 MAX, but there were plenty of safety jitters. Accidents make headlines, but the continuous quest to make commercial aviation safer and safer is a hell of an important story, an amazing success. I was visiting with a friend recently, and we were recalling the days early in our careers of go teams and multiple crashes every year in the U.S. alone. This is a story of technology improvements and training improvements, of transparency and reporting, of learning from mistakes and putting safety ahead of profits and convenience. The industry has taken the safest mode of transportation and made it exponentially safer, which is a remarkable achievement. It's worth taking note of this, and also noting that the job is never completed and a lot of safety work still needs to be done. And speaking of safety, Ben, the Federal Aviation Administration issued a report on Boeing declaring the safety culture at the manufacturer, quote, inadequate and confusing, quote. This is exactly what has to happen. Call out the problems, force Boeing to make fixes, get back to focusing on safety. The FAA gave Boeing 90 days to come up with a plan to address quality control issues. FAA Administrator Mike Whitaker said, quote, making foundational change will require a sustained effort from Boeing's leadership, and we are going to hold them accountable every step of the way with mutual understood milestones and expectations. And Boeing CEO Dave Calhoun said he was on board with that. Boeing, he said, quote, has a clear picture of what needs to be done. Part of what needs to be done, apparently, is bringing Spirit AeroSystems, the company that makes 737 fuselages for Boeing, back into the Boeing hangar. Boeing confirmed it is in talks to acquire Spirit, which it spun off about 19 years ago. It'll be complicated. Spirit has a plant in Ireland, for example, that makes components for Airbus. And Spirit said it was in talks with both Airbus and Boeing. This is a major thing in aviation because it's a huge supplier to both Airbus and Boeing, and splitting it up is going to be tricky. Boeing has to find a way to reverse its cost-cutting culture and reclaim its engineering prowess in new product development. And most importantly, it has to get back to the same kind of safety obsession that has served the industry so well and led to dramatic improvements in safety, even when the accident rate was already very, very small. There's no checklist or 30-day plan for safety. It has to be constant and continuous and paramount. And it's none of that at Boeing right now, apparently. So, Ben, congratulations to the industry on the safest year in the history of commercial aviation. Now get to work on making it better.
It is great news. But we can't relax, like you say. I think Mike Whitaker appears to be doing a good job holding Boeing accountable. He's been out to Seattle and had day-long meetings in D.C. He's calling the shots and not letting Boeing off the hook. I'm encouraged that we can do even better on safety. I'm standing by for more news, Scott.
Haha, Ben, you know I want to talk about same-day standby changes at American. On March 1st, American very quietly changed the rules on same-day standby. Getting on an earlier flight is now only available to Advantage members or elite-level members in partner frequent flyer programs. And you have to get yourself on the standby list either online or on American's app. No more going to the gate and asking an agent unless you're at the Platinum Pro or higher level of American's elite ranks. You'll need to get on the list 45 minutes before departure, only 15 minutes for Concierge Key, Executive Platinum, or Platinum Pro. Airlines relaxed standby rules in the pandemic because there were plenty of empty seats and plenty of reasons why your schedule might change. Now we're moving back to normal. I think it's interesting that American has found a way to potentially get more customers to join its frequent flyer program. We've talked many times about how important loyalty program earnings are to airlines. I also think it's interesting that the change was made, as far as I can tell, without any notice to customers. This may affect only a small number of travelers, but I think airlines very much have a habit of changing the rules to disadvantage customers and then not telling them. In this case, until they run up to the gate and the poor gate agent has to tell the customer to buzz off.
Well, American is clearly saying we're only gonna love you if you buy from us, join our program, and play the game by our rules.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate because even the first time customer matters, and you know, I don't know. It just seems like all of this bifurcation of your customer base, you know, it really hurts the people at the lower end, right?
And by separating levels the way they have, it puts pressure on the gate agents.
Yeah, that's right. Especially when you change the rules and don't tell anybody and leave it to them to try and explain all this.
Right.
All right, two other items I thought were interesting, Ben. First, we talked last week in response to a mailbag question about how airlines select new routes. No better example than Brisbane, Australia this week. Delta announced it was launching Los Angeles, Brisbane. That's after United launched service to Brisbane from San Francisco and Los Angeles. an American announced Dallas, Brisbane. What the heck is going on? It's like Taylor Swift moved to Brisbane. No, it's subsidies. The government of Queensland has allocated $200 million to its, quote, attracting aviation investment fund. Like many cities, Brisbane wants more air passengers to come and spend. An investment in airline service can stimulate the local economy and create more tax revenue. Or not. But clearly, the subsidies play a big role in how airlines decide where to put very expensive airplanes.
You know, Scott, these subsidies can help, but everyone knows that only works with subsidies won't last long.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it certainly helps in the early days when you're trying to build up a market, but I'm not sure it works when all of a sudden there's, you know, service from four different U.S. cities, major hubs, you've got three big airlines competing. There's bound to be a shakeout, right?
Yes, that's a lot of new seats. They're not all going to be filled.
Yeah. No, I think if it were me, I'd tell Queensland, focus on one. Although it's difficult in the subsidy game to pick particular airline. You have to offer the program, and if three airlines sign up for it, I think you're stuck with it. All right, and in the wish I had thought of that category, Ben, I saw a story about a couple who is buried under a 9,000-foot runway at Savannah Hilton Head International in Georgia. The gravestones of Richard and Catherine Dotson are actually embedded in runway 10, the airport's most active runway. They are off to the side near the end, framed in asphalt. The airport thinks they are the only visible gravestones embedded in a runway in the world. When the runway was expanded during World War II, the federal government acquired the land holding the Dotson family cemetery. All but four graves were relocated, but the family's great-grandchildren negotiated for Richard and Catherine's headstones to remain part of the new runway, and two other Dotson graves are off to the side of the runway. My mother-in-law wanted to be buried facing Neiman Marcus, Ben, and she is. If there was a way to do it, I'd go for the runway plot. It would no doubt be quite an undertaking, but I love the thought of airplanes greasing the landing right on my memorial. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust, the 6 p.m. to LaGuardia or to heaven, a runway is never thought of as a dead end.
How great that the kids negotiated that. What a nice memorial for their parents.
Yeah, I thought that was really a great story.
Yes.
All right. Speaking of great stories, Airlines Confidential wouldn't exist without our sponsors. We want to thank Cirium, which offers the most accurate and precise data and analytics to enable airlines to optimize planning, operations, and passenger services. The right intelligence drives operational efficiencies, enables you to predict market shifts, and helps airlines respond quickly to maximize revenue, manage costs, and seize commercial opportunity. Visit Cirium.com for more. We also want to thank Pratt & Whitney. At Pratt & Whitney, the pursuit of more sustainable aviation is foundational. For decades, Pratt & Whitney has been at the forefront of revolutionary advancements in aircraft propulsion technology. And by working smarter, cleaner, and greener today, they are committed to supporting the aviation industry in its goal of reaching net zero CO2 emissions by 2050. Learn more about Pratt & Whitney's smarter technology, cleaner fuel, and greener business at prattwhitney.com. And we want to thank DoHop, which is revolutionizing travel connectivity. DoHop is a travel technology provider enabling airlines to expand their networks, offer more connectivity, create additional partnerships, and focus on improving the customer experience with more offers, services, and travel options. Airlines benefit from generating additional revenue, lower costs, and maintaining full customer ownership. Plus, in the event of travel disruptions, DoHop works with airlines and offers assistance in helping passengers reach their final destination. Visit DoHop.com. That's DoHop.com. Last week, Ben, we started talking about the changes American is making in its relationship with travel agencies. We both thought those changes are important and could well be copied by other airlines. So let's bring in Zane Kirby to learn more about it from the travel agency perspective. Few people know the travel agency world as well as Zane Kirby. Zane is the president and chief executive officer of the American Society of Travel Advisors, the largest association of travel advisors in the world. Asked to represent 7,500 travel agencies employing 90,000 people. Zane has led ASTA for 11 years and was at the Global Business Travel Association for 3 years before that. He graduated from Brigham Young University and earned an MBA from the University of Maryland. Zane is a calm, knowledgeable advocate for travel advisors who has led the industry through many ups and downs and finds himself yet again in the eye of a new storm. Zane, thanks for joining us today. Let's start with some background for listeners on ASTA. In 2018, you changed your name from the American Society of Travel Agents to the American Society of Travel Advisors, reflecting the changing nature of the travel agency business. Explain that.
Well, hey, Scott, and hey, Ben, it's certainly a pleasure to be with you today, and thank you for allowing me on your program. Yeah, we did change our name in 2018, and the real credit goes to people like Matthew Upchurch, who's the head of Virtuoso, and others who have been pushing the term advisors for years. Now, back in like 2016 and 17, the board asked us to commission a consumer study on agents. What did people think of them? What value did they place on their work? And kind of at the end, we asked about the name. And we found something interesting, that many consumers were confused by the term. And not so much confused like about what an agent is, but who the agent actually worked for. Some thought they worked for the supplier. Some thought they worked for themselves. But we really wanted to make it clear that the term advisor makes it really more clear who the professional is actually working for, and it's the client, the traveler. So we wanted the name of ASTA to reflect that reality.
Hi, Zane. Many people predicted that online bookings and caps on commissions would be the end of travel agents. How have they survived?
Well, hey, Ben, it's a really great question. You know, our members, they don't own any airplanes, hotels, or cars to rent, right? It's an asset-light business model. But our members, I think they primarily survive because they have a deep knowledge of a complicated system of rules and schedules and destination and marketing promises. I recently went on a river cruise to Egypt. And several advisors were aboard, leading tours of clients. And one of them's name was Sintra. She had worked as the executive assistant to Howard Schultz, the CEO of Starbucks, for 20 years. I can imagine that was probably a pretty tough job. But she quit that job to become a travel advisor. She told me that she worked at Starbucks corporate to feed her family, but she became an advisor to feed her soul. I love that. And last week, I went to New Orleans. Our chapter president there, who's now an advisor, was a disgruntled estate attorney in Virginia. She wanted to flex her entrepreneurial muscle in an industry that everybody loves. So she also became an advisor. So, you know, you've asked, like, why have they survived? I think despite all the myriad changes that have happened and the systemic things that have happened in our industry, it's because they provide a service that the traveling public wants and needs. Travel's complicated and it's expensive and it's very personal. And, you know, apologies to you, Scott, but I talked to the New York Times reporter last week about this, and she asked the same question. I asked her if she knew who I should trust in Kenya, right? I want to go to Kenya. Who do I trust? She didn't know, and I don't either, and you guys probably don't know either. There are a million marketing promises online. A good experienced travel advisor knows which of them that you should trust, you know, how to get the best value for your dollar and what's the right fit for you. Consumers get it even more after the pandemic. You know, when you travel... And so that's when you travel on your own. And when you travel for your company uses a travel agency for different reasons, but agencies are absolutely integral to corporate America's success.
So airlines, at least American, seem to be making a new effort to move customers away from travel agency booking to booking directly at the airline. Recently, American said it wouldn't award frequent flyer miles to tickets booked through agencies that aren't on American's preferred list. The preferred list will be announced April 1st, and this will go into effect May 1st. So many questions about this, Zane. But first, big picture, is this a threat to travel agencies?
A threat to agencies? No. It's more kind of a self-inflicted wound for American Airlines, in my opinion. It's kind of like a I've got a gun, don't make me shoot strategy, right? It's not the move of a confident, measured management team. And it feels like the punishment is kind of misplaced, right? They're having a hard time bringing their modern retailing strategy to market. And it's tough. I mean, I get it. You know, I don't know about you, Ben, when you were running Spirit, but IT projects always take twice as long and cost twice as much as originally intended, right? And that's the position American Airlines is in. So instead of working through it calmly, they've said, okay, you, our most loyal and profitable customers, buy a ticket through this particular window where we do business, no miles for you. Wait, so like instead of punishing the tech companies, they're going to punish the consumer who is buying their most expensive tickets? Tell me how that works out. You know, they aren't saying like we're making a decision that our lowest fares are no longer to offer miles. You know, why? I may disagree with that decision on some level. You kind of understand it. What they're saying is you keep buying these expensive tickets or we have chosen to put them and we'll punish you. Now, you know, Scott, I don't have a crystal ball, but I'm not sure how that's going to produce the desired outcome. I guess we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
It's very curious to me. What does an agency have to do to be preferred by American?
You know, Ben, I've been trying to get that answer directly from American Airlines for about a week. You know, I've read all the things you guys had. You know, they've been strangely quiet. You know, apparently, like a certain amount of bookings, 30% or so, have to go through this new NDC channel or window by the end of April. No one we've talked to is going to meet that threshold. But the folks left over at American, and you know, they've been through multiple rounds of layoffs, so it's hard to get someone on the phone. Some of them have had quiet conversations and have assured some agencies that even though they aren't going to meet the threshold by the prescribed date, they'll still be preferred. I think that the 30%, you know, mark and the date are deliberately opaque so that American can play kingmaker. They'll reward agencies who've been quiet and compliant and punish agencies who have been vocal. I think that's what this is about.
So which agencies would be hit the hardest? Small companies that don't have the technology to direct connect with American, or leisure-oriented agencies selling cheap tickets?
No, I don't really think it's the agencies that are going to get hit hard, Scott. The damage really here is to American Airlines because they're changing the promise of something that they are doing themselves. You know, if you believe them, they're in charge of their product, they're in charge of their prices, they're in charge of their miles. Now they're telling the customers paying the higher fares that they might not get their miles. Mm. The small leisure agencies that seem to be in the crosshairs, right, because they don't have an obvious way to offer miles if they aren't preferred. But, you know, they'll adapt as they always have. You know, some of them are going to develop relationships with agencies who are preferred and book AA tickets through them. That's what makes this policy so sort of strange and wrongheaded. AA has said, you know, corporate agreements are carved out of this particular policy. Consortia and host agencies can get carved out under certain conditions. If you can't do that, though, a company can open up an AA business advantage account. There are all these workarounds, and agencies like the small leisure agencies you're talking about who don't have an obvious workaround, they'll establish a relationship with an agency who is AA preferred. So to me, it kind of looks like a rather toothless threat, but it has the potential to rile up customers, which I think is the strangest part of this.
So is it fair to say Vasu Raja isn't on your Christmas card list?
Ben, I send one to him, but funnily enough, I don't get one back.
Well, this new policy also discontinues advantage accruals for basic economy tickets purchased through travel agents. this is gonna hit big online agencies like Expedia, right?
You know, this is kind of the most interesting part of this whole thing to me, Ben, because, I mean, there's a big difference between the service level of an OTA or an online travel agency and a traditional travel agency. One is more transactional and one is more consultative. Now, my understanding is that basic economy accounts for a small share of OTA business. So will some other customers be affected? Sure. But OTAs have been the best and fastest adopters of NDC technology. Both of those big guys, I think Expedia and Booking, both have a majority of bookings via NDC right now. But it feels like they bear most of the longer-term risk here. I think that OTAs provide a vital industry service that American Airlines is desperately trying to dismantle. They clearly don't want anyone to comparative shop for any reason. Just come to me directly and get the best deal, right? No need to comparison shop anymore. I think that American Airlines felt that the internet reduced them to a commodity that could be compared by price and schedule. Clearly, they're not interested in that anymore. And that's why I think in the longer term, the OTAs are more vulnerable. They're kind of like the last public bastion of comparative shopping. So I'm rooting for them, and I hope they can stay with it.
So before, when airlines wanted to shift bookings away from travel agencies, it's usually been back office stuff that consumers don't see, right? Commissions, incentives for market share, negotiations on compensation for ticket sales, all of that. Is this the first time an airline has decided to punish customers for using a travel agency? And how do you think consumers are going to react to this?
Yeah, you know, Scott, it's the first time I can think of. That's why I think it's got everyone scratching their head so much.
Yeah.
Because it's brand new, you know, honestly, I don't know how it's going to work out. You mentioned people, you know, for the most part, these sort of wars have been played out behind the scenes. But this is the first time that someone has come out and said, hey, listen, you know what? We're tired of, I guess, some of the feet dragging that either the technology companies that stand between us and our agency partners have made. And so we're going to punish the end customer. It's a fascinating move. I don't see how it's going to work out well, but for anyone involved, but it certainly has stirred up a lot of controversy.
Mm-hmm.
But what's the harm in an airline wanting customers to book directly and giving them an incentive for that?
Yeah, Ben, it's a good question. I don't think there is any harm. I don't think the issue is really harm. The issue is about customer service, right? Smart airlines, like I just say Delta, for example, they look at advisors as an extension of their sales force and also their customer service effort. You know, they seem to understand that customers are actually booking in other ways and that travel advisors perform a vital service. You know, you and I, when we've missed a connection, you look at that line of people that are standing there waiting for customer service. You can break out in hives if you look over there. Now, people who've worked with an advisor for their trip, they call their advisor and their advisor can work behind the scenes to get them rebooked so quickly. So I don't have any problem with incentivizing people to go direct if that's what you want to do. But I think it's not sort of acknowledging that the reality that travel advisors perform a vital service. That's why people use them. That's why people continue to book for them. And in reality, the interesting thing is, you know, we talk with agencies of all shapes and sizes. Some of the mid-size and larger agencies who are NDC capable and ready, their corporate customers will not turn it on. They've refused to turn it on because it's not fully functional right now. And it doesn't allow them to track their employees. It doesn't allow them to perform duty of care. And so the corporate customers are willing to pay a higher price right now through non-NDC channels than get a lower price through the NDC channel. Because again, they feel like there's more at play than just a low price. So I think their policy needs to acknowledge that people do want a comparative shop. They do want the services provided by travel advisors, particularly on the corporate side. And I think that, you know, the incentives have always kind of acknowledge that. And now they've stepped outside of that. It's just going to be fascinating to see what happens.
So in NDC, by the way, just for listeners who may not be familiar, it was new distribution capability, right? That's what NDC is saying. And it was a new technology that IATA first proposed, as I recall, and it was designed to make it easier to sell options, to sell, to book baggage fees and seat assign fees and other things like that. And it's really sort of morphed into airlines trying to direct connect and avoid the Sabres and Amadeuses, right? Or is that oversimplification?
No, I think you have it right, Scott. The original application that IATA, who represents all the airlines, made to the Department of Transportation, it actually said, hey, listen, we're tired of being compared by price and schedule. We're so much more than that. We want to be able to charge for bag fees. We want to be able to have people compare us on different elements of the airline experience. So the old technology doesn't work for us anymore. We need this new technology that's more robust, and it's going to allow people to compare different constellations of value from each of the airlines. So you can compare a Delta Airlines that might have a connection with a but might offer you a free lounge pass and a free bag with an American Airlines flight that might go direct, but might offer you a smaller seat and no checked baggage. So it was actually the whole idea was for people to be able to compare more elements of the flying experience. Well, to your point, the exact that was how they got it approved by the Department of Transportation back in 2013. But now they've all taken this technology, run with it by themselves, and are saying, no, it's not for comparison shopping of all the different elements of the airline experience. It's for you coming directly to me and buying directly from me. And now American Airlines has doubled down and said, you're going to buy directly from me or else you're not going to get your miles.
Yes.
Yeah. Very odd.
Yeah. Yeah. And comparison shopping, as you've mentioned, is so important to this. It's so fascinating. The internet gave travelers perfect price information, right? You could easily comparison shop. And there's far more pricing information available in this business than in any other, in, you know, cars or TVs or a gallon of milk, for example. But airlines now seem to be trying to take that away, at least American, and keep people from comparison shopping. Do you think they can put the toothpaste back into the tube?
I don't know, Scott. I mean, I think they're trying, right? Yeah. It seems deeply anti-capitalist and deeply un-American, pardon the pun, not to put your offer in the market to compete, right? My sense is that I don't want to be, cynical here, but most large oligopolistic companies rarely do things in the public interest. But the smart ones try to do things that don't invite congressional and regulatory scrutiny, right?
Yeah.
It feels like AA is pushing the boundaries here. You know, you saw the trouble that Wendy's got into the other day for suggesting what the airlines do to us every single day, you know, right. Surge pricing.
Right.
Senator Warren went on a tirade that will not soon be forgotten on the Senate floor. You know, sometimes it's a short distance between a tirade and a congressional hearing or a directive from the executive branch to the DOT or the FTC.
Yeah.
We'll just have to see how this works out, I guess.
Yeah. Well, Zane, this has been really enlightening. We appreciate the information. We appreciate your perspective on it all. It's such a fascinating time of change in the business, and I'm glad you could join us. Thanks very much for being with us on Airlines Confidential.
Scott, Ben, thank you. An absolute pleasure to be with you.
Thank you, Zane.
Take care.
And we'll be back with more on Airlines Confidential in a minute.
Promotional consideration provided by thearchive.net, celebrating 20 years with a fresh new look and over 60,000 items of AvGeek goodness. It's the hub of air transport history, and you're welcome aboard thearchive.net.
Thanks again to Zane for clarifying key points and enlightening us all. It's going to be very interesting to see how this all shakes out.
Absolutely. Ben, I want to remind listeners that Airlines Confidential will be on stage for a keynote podcast at Aviation Festival Americas on May 15th in Miami Beach. This is the 16th year for Aviation Festival Americas, and it brings together more than 250 influential leaders from the U.S., Canada, and Latin America. If you'd like to attend, listeners can get a 50% discount by going to airlinesconfidential.com, clicking on the Aviation Festival banner ad, and using the promo code AC50. It's going to be a great event, and we are looking forward to being part of it. By the way, I was on the Aviation Festival website this week, and it offers a 30% discount. The 50% discount you can get from AC50 really is a good deal. Some other interesting questions in the mailbag this week, Ben. First, Mehdi from Charlotte says, I'm a flight attendant at one of the majors here in the U.S., and I'm curious to know how airline management views the flight attendants as a whole. It seems to me service, while touted publicly as being hugely important, will always take a distant backseat to safety, operational reliability, and profitability. This disproportionately affects the flight attendants, since missing supplies or tools we need to properly deliver a service are treated as a nice-to-have instead of a priority. We are then the ones that have to take the brunt of disgruntled passengers, and we also see firsthand how this negatively affects people's relationship with our airline. Does management view the flight attendants as a necessary role because of the safety requirement, or are they viewed as an asset that can do much more than fulfill a regulatory need? Ben, what do you think?
Well, I can't say what every airline thinks, but clearly, flight attendants are the first and most important line in relation to the customers. They're with them the whole flight. So yes, they have a safety role, but they also have a critical service role. They should have supplies, food, be catered properly. The galleys need to work, and they shouldn't be in a position where they can't do their job.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's an interesting question. It always has been, right? I think in the past, flight attendants felt like they weren't taken seriously as safety professionals. Safety was their first priority, and they're not just there to serve soft drinks. On the other hand, as you say, they have this dual role of being in charge of a safe flight in the cabin, being there for any kind of emergency situation. We've seen evacuation after evacuation how important trained, skilled flight attendants are in saving lives. And yet, as you say, they are the front line of service in a service business. So it's critically important. I think management does take the flight attendant profession more seriously than it used to in the past. But that may not be saying a whole lot, because I think in the past, flight attendants didn't get the respect they deserve.
I think that's right.
Okay, and Thomas from Dallas writes in with the following. Hey, Ben and Scott, I continue to be impressed with the caliber of guests and discussions you have on the show. I love getting my Av Geek cup filled during my Wednesday commute every week. Thank you, Thomas. Scott had a lot to say regarding carry-on bag policies last week. Ben, you noted that the newer, bigger bins airlines are installing are heavier, resulting in higher fuel burn. My issue here is with American in particular. They have a large percentage of their narrow-body Airbus and Boeing fleets fitted with larger bins. However, time and time again, I see them underutilizing the asset. First, passengers don't read the placards instructing them to store rollerboards upright in the bin versus laying them flat. That's no surprise. However, I think some more intense customer education might help passengers learn how to do the right thing and in turn help themselves and fellow passengers. I know flight attendants can't lift bags. I deal with workman's comp as an in-house counsel, so I get it. But maybe some announcements and flight attendants' position throughout the cabin, letting passengers know what to do, would help. This is partly a passenger behavior problem, which is difficult to solve. Another issue is how American handles gate check bags. I know the gate agents use a formula to determine when they need to start gate checking. However, it seems that this formula may be outdated and gate agents start gate checking bags when there is still ample bin space on board. I spoke with a purser on a recent flight. He told me that it really gets on his nerves that gate agents do this because he has flights that go out frequently with good amounts of empty bin space. It frustrates customers, which makes his job harder. That leads me to a third issue with all airlines that charge checked bag fees. Airlines know well before departure whether a flight is going to be full or not. Why not start trying to get passengers to check their bags during online check-in? Something like, your flight from Dallas-Fort Worth to New York is expected to be full. In order to ensure an on-time departure, we will allow you to check one carry-on size bag free of charge for this flight. That way, passengers can plan ahead and check bags where they should be checked, at the counter, which helps passengers, gate agents, and airlines run a smoother operation. The mess that is gate checking is horribly inefficient. It causes delays and is a poor use of labor resources. A policy like this could be limited to carry-on size bags only, so as not to dilute the benefits to co-branded credit card holders and elite frequent flyers. In reality, though, this is a duct tape measure. If an airline is going to spend money installing and flying those bigger, heavier bins around and then advertise it as an enhancement to the customer, they need to figure out a way to utilize the asset. My education background is in economics. I hate seeing inefficiencies like this. If an airline isn't going to use the asset, why expend the capital? Thanks again for your insight. I'm with you, Thomas, and I think this is actually a perfect time to raise this question because I think we've gotten to sort of the tipping point in the large bins. I think airlines were reluctant to push the education aspect a lot because then you'd be disappointed when you got on an airplane that didn't have the big bins. Well, now at American, 80% of their narrow-body fleet has the big bins, so let's get on with educating people about it. To some of your suggestions, I have seen some flight attendants who are very proactive at trying to teach passengers how to properly load big bins and turn the bags upright themselves. And then I've seen some who really couldn't care at all and aren't paying attention. And alerting people at check-in seems like a very good idea to me. Just as an aside, I've several times recently heard a very proactive announcement at Southwest Airlines gates. The gate agent announces that it is a completely full flight, which is good information for all of us to have, right? And then only 62 bags have been checked or 75 bags have been checked. Again, real information that's specific to the flight and persuasive. The agent declares that's not enough, and so if you're in Group C, you better come check your bag now. Otherwise, it will get a handwritten tag at the end of the jet bridge. And who knows if you'll see the bag again. Seriously, it seemed like effective pressure, no?
That's funny. You know, I remember being on one flight. I wish I remember the carrier where when you opened the bin, it showed pictures in the back of bags properly loaded. Mm-hmm. That was a good idea.
Yeah.
And Thomas's thoughts are all good. But remember, we like big bins and we cannot lie.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, on that note, that's all for another episode of Airlines Confidential. Thanks again to Zane Kirby for educating us all on the continuing importance of travel advisors. We'll be back with much more next week.
Thanks and apologies. This sir makes a lot.
This podcast is produced by Mass Media. Info at massmedia.net.